Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, it's only your third day back from vacation, but we're already at all crazy martinis. Crazy, crazy, crazy across the board. And ESPN's so crazy this time, they get the first martini of the day. They're not just relegated to a super crazy third martini. This is courtesy, I believe, originally of Outkick the Coverage, which is a sports blog. First time I think we've used them as a source, but nonetheless, they're the ones who got this story. In a story that seems made for The Onion, but is actually true, according to multiple Outkick fans inside ESPN, MS-ESPN, decided to pull an Asian college football announcer named Robert Lee off the William & Mary at University of Virginia college football game because they were concerned that having an Asian football announcer named Robert Lee would be offensive to some viewers. Did I mention that Robert Lee is Asian? Is this even real life anymore? This might even be worse than MS-ESPN apologizing for the fantasy football slave draft a couple of weeks ago. To avoid offending left-wing idiots, Robert Lee, the Asian college football announcer, not the Confederate general who died in 1870 and shares a name with him, was switched to the Youngstown State at Pittsburgh game, and Dave Weekly will now call the William & Mary at University of Virginia game unless someone tries to take down Dave Weekly statues between now and kickoff. Then a few folks consider this a hoax, that this blog got suckered into posting a story that wasn't true. But lo and behold, later on Tuesday evening, ESPN releases a statement. Quote, "We collectively made the decision with Robert to switch games as the tragic events in Charlottesville were unfolding, simply because of the coincidence of his name. In that moment, it felt right to all parties. It's a shame that this is even a topic of conversation, and we regret that who calls play-by-play for a football game has become an issue," unquote. Jim, who made it an issue? I'm pretty sure that people would have been just fine with this guy announcing the game.
You know, Greg, right there in the statement, the words, "just because of the coincidence of his name," should have been a glaring warning sign to them. That basically, we don't have a good reason to ask him to not do this. We don't have a logical reason to think that his work is substandard or somehow would not be appropriate, or he wouldn't be good at doing this. We don't have any reason to think that he himself is offensive or an offensive figure or a figure of controversy. Just because he shares a name with a controversial historical figure, we've decided he cannot call this game, and we're switching him out. And I, you know, this to me is not just asinine decision making. It is an indication of the fear and terror in the hearts of the people running ESPN that they will someday find themselves on the wrong side of the social justice warrior, angry online mob coin, and that they will find themselves being denounced for being somehow pro-slavery or pro-Confederacy or pro-white supremacy because they had the audacity to allow a sportscaster named Robert Lee to call a game. You make this point, and there are some ninnies on the internet to say, "Look, Jim, according to the statement, it was by mutual agreement." Now, those of us who have been, you know, you and I talk about ESPN surprisingly regularly on this podcast, not because we want to, because ESPN gets more and more political each year, it seems. And one of the points we covered earlier this year was they made some fairly big layoffs, like 100 people and fairly big names that we're used to seeing on the network for a really long time, the Ed Werders, the John Claytons, etc. And so ESPN has just had this massive round of layoffs, and then they go to Robert Lee, the sportscaster, who, as far as anybody knows, is perfectly fine at his job, and says, "Bobby, we're going to ask you to not do this game because we think people might be offended by your name." If you're Robert Lee, how strongly do you object to this, knowing that close to 100 of your colleagues have just been laid off? Do you want to make trouble for your boss? Do you want to make trouble for the company? Or do you want to say, "Yes, sir, no, sir, I'll be perfectly happy to do another game"? You could say, look, in the end, this is not – Robert Lee, as far as we know, has not issued any statements and doesn't want to make any waves. And I can't begrudge the guy. All he wants to do is call sports events, and he should be free to do that. ESPN is managing to live up to its worst stereotype, live up to the worst phrases of its critics. And my colleague Michael Brendan Doherty makes a very, you know, I think a very astute point. Look, they're getting raked over the coals. You and I are making fun of them, Greg. Everybody on conservative media is. They're getting, you know, if their effort was to avoid controversy, they've managed to step right into it. But they're getting the controversy of criticism from conservatives. They can live with this. They're used to this. It only happens in days ending with a Y. They are not used to coming into criticism from the left, and that's what really terrifies them, and that is what their decision-making indicates they are desperate to avoid.
And that's what they're getting this time. It'd be hilarious if they put him back in to appease the criticism coming from the left. But this might actually be a decent career move for Mr. Lee, because when Youngstown State plays Pittsburgh, at least one team in that game plays at a Division 1A level, whereas when it's William & Mary and UVA, both teams are nowhere near actual Division 1A level. Sorry, UVA fans, but hasn't been true for a while there in Charlottesville. All right, let's move on.
Greg, hasn't the University of Virginia suffered enough lately?
All right, let's move on to the second crazy martini now. And you knew something was going to come out of this from last night. Trump had his much-anticipated rally in Phoenix, Arizona, campaign style. So many different aspects to this. He was in classic Trump campaign mode, pretty much shooting from the hip. He got a lot of attention for kind of walking through his response to Charlottesville. He even pulled out the script of what he said three different times and kind of mocked the media for making more out of it than he believes that they should have. He talked about Republican senators in the state negatively, John McCain for voting against the skinny repeal, Jeff Flake in general, although he didn't mention them by name, although he did mention Flake by name this morning in a tweet. And then he also spent a lot of time just on the media in general, a lot of which, you know, there's considerable fair criticism of the media for even as off the rails as Trump goes sometimes. The media certainly does it as well. But here's one thing that he said that just simply wasn't true.
The live red lights, they're turning those suckers off fast out there. They're turning those lights off fast. Like CNN does not want its falling viewership to watch what I'm saying tonight, I can tell.
And Jim, I was actually watching that little bit of it while it was happening, and so I flipped over to CNN, and sure enough, they were still carrying it. Turns out that they had other cameras in the room, so when Trump said that and people were turning around and looking at those cameras, they went to a different shot or something. So it's pretty easy to check that. That didn't actually happen. And so Trump just went on and on with the media, called them dishonest people. They were terrible people. And that obviously got the media riled up. They could have gone after Trump for a million different things. And instead, Don Lemon of CNN goes after him for this.
He is clearly trying to ignite a civil war in this country. Mm-hmm. He has not tamped down race. And I'm just going to say, I mean, if he was on my team in this newsroom and said those things, he would be escorted out of the building by security. Yes. And I have to, my colleague Anna Navarro says something, and I want you to respond to this, because I asked Bakari about the 25th Amendment. And she said the only possible, and this is on Twitter, the only possible defensible explanation for Trump's disgusting, unpresidential, mm-hmm. narcissistic behavior would be early onset dementia. Maybe.
So those are well fact-based allegations. Jim, he wants to start a second
civil war. The only possible reason. It can't be that he's a narcissist. Can't be that he's the exact same guy we saw on the campaign. Like, there are lots of us who don't like him, but we don't. When he goes off and does stuff like this, I'm not stunned. Right, it's like, well, there he goes again. Right, this is the Trump we're used to. And so, I feel like I'm watching a fight between two drunks, and instead of just swinging at each other, they're both trying to do the crane move from Karate Kid. In the sense that Donald Trump, for all of his flaws, has a lot of really legitimate gripes about the way the media has covered him. There are, you know, we as the Morning Jolt, I kind of laid out, there are a bunch of stories that that institutions like CNN have had to retract. There are stories that they have either been very thinly sourced that have not panned out. You know, Priebus was on the verge of being fired for like, you know, not 6 months before he actually finally departed. There's this constant, the coverage is thinly sourced. It's always negative. There's a lot of legitimate gripes. So what does he say? They're not broadcasting what I'm saying right now. And everyone watching at home on CNN is saying, well, actually, yes, they are, because I'm watching you. Right. You're going to need stronger evidence than the red light on the camera went out, because traditionally that means, OK, this camera is not broadcasting. We've switched to another one, and it could be one showing the arena, or it could be back to studio, or you know, there are a bunch of things it could be. But it's not necessarily they have stopped broadcasting this speech. Trump somehow manages to pick the least defensible ground to fight on. So here is Trump, you know, creating his own fake news, right? He's making his an indefensible argument. And what does CNN say? He, at least Don Lemon, say? He is trying to start a civil war and he's crazy. Thank you, guys. I've never seen somebody retreat from the moral high ground so quickly. Does Trump's decision-making and thinking always make sense to the rest of us? No, but that's kind of baked in the cake of who he is. He's impulsive. He's erratic. He, you know, is kind of moves quickly based on unexpected decision-making and stuff. That's who he is. I don't see anything enormously different from that. And this whole idea that he's trying to start a civil war, look, no, it does not count for that. So, and then, of course, outside, the protesters are throwing canisters at police. So we have three people who all manage to have whatever point, whatever valid points they have, whatever arguments they have. They have an amazing ability to undermine your own sympathy for them because they manage to defend on the absolute worst one.
Yeah, it just goes round and round. Secretly, I think they both love each other because they both need each other. It's kind of a weird codependency thing. All right, let's move on to the last crazy martini now, Jim, and this is courtesy of USA Today. A little bit of background necessary here. Valerie Plame Wilson, for those of you who don't remember, she was a figure back in 2003. She's married to a guy named Joe Wilson, not the congressman, but the ambassador, who claimed that some of the evidence leading up to the Iraq war was falsified, particularly British intelligence about Saddam Hussein getting yellow cake uranium in Africa. Nonetheless, she went on to accuse Robert Novak and Karl Rove of illegally leaking her name because she was a CIA covert operative. There was a special counsel appointed. This is during the George W. Bush years. In the end, her name was leaked by Richard Armitage, but there was never actually a charge for leaking her name, which means she probably wasn't a covert agent. Nonetheless, she was a big Democratic hero. They made a really unsuccessful movie about her, and now she's back in the news for some reason. Here it goes. Valerie Plame Wilson is on a mission to get President Trump off Twitter. How? By buying it, of course. Wilson, best known for being revealed as a CIA operative because of a leak during the George W. Bush administration, has started a GoFundMe page to buy a controlling interest in Twitter in order to delete the president's account. The company is currently worth nearly $12 billion, with its shares going for around $16. Quote, Donald Trump has done a lot of horrible things on Twitter, from emboldening white supremacists to promoting violence against journalists. His tweets damaged the country and put people in harm's way, Wilson wrote on the campaign's page. Quote, but threatening actual nuclear war with North Korea takes it to a dangerous new level. So, Jim, I'm sure you're thrilled to see Valerie Plame Wilson thrusting herself back onto the public stage, and all in an effort to raise $1 billion to kick Trump off of Twitter.
So far, 145 people in 6 days have separated themselves from $6,505. Now, by the way, first of all, if you really hate Trump, then you probably shouldn't want him to go off Twitter. Whatever advantage Trump gets from the number of followers and responses and things like that, really deep down, it's usually destructive, right? These are where his angriest and least thought out impulsive comments come. They can dominate the news cycle and distract from whatever he's actually trying to do. He always comes across as this semi-literate, whiny, enraged lunatic when he tweets like this. So if you really don't like Trump, you don't want him off Twitter. You want more of his presidency on Twitter, right? You want to make sure he doesn't do things like his speech on Afghanistan, where he actually sounded presidential and sounded like he had really thought through a serious foreign policy challenge and was acting presidential. Instead, the only way she can think of to deal with it is to take over Twitter, right? This is to shut him down, right? To basically say we need to stop his ability to speak. We need to stop the ability of the president of the United States to speak to a large audience. I hate to tell it to you, Valerie, but if he doesn't, he could switch to Facebook and get pretty much the same right? Instagram, Snapchat, every couple of years they come out with some hot new social media format. Even if you buy this, you're not going to manage to shut down the president's ability to talk to people because he's the president of the United States. Here's the flaw in your plan, Valerie. Unless that assumes, of course, you really do want to shut down the communications ability of the president of the United States. In all likelihood, you probably just want a lot of money, right? This is the Jill Stein playbook. Give me a lot of money and I will make sure Trump doesn't become president. Wink, wink, And people give to it, because they're really, let's assume she gets less than the billion or so that she's hoping. What do you do if you only get like, you know, a couple million? Oh, sorry, I'll have to use that money somewhere else.
That's a good question.
You know, just say it almost, again, this, people say these are crazy martinis, and one of our listeners asked how often each category crops up. So clearly this is the sort of day where crazy is going to jump ahead. But this is one of those days, Greg, where almost everything we said could have been in The Onion a couple of days ago.
Right. The Onion's got to be struggling now to come up with things that seem outrageous compared to the actual news. It actually, I think, makes their job harder.
I was going to say, do you think at their editorial meeting, they just kind of sit around and pitch ideas, and the editor-in-chief says, nah, that already happened. Not that happened a week ago. Nah, let's wait till this afternoon. Let's see what he says. He might actually say that, you know.
We're trying to keep up. Crazy's definitely in the lead this year. There's no doubt about that. We haven't run the numbers. We might not run the numbers, but I can't think of a day we haven't had a crazy, and I can think of plenty where we've had multiple. So I'm guessing crazy's in front and good is way behind.
Well, at least it's Friday, right, Greg?
No, Jim. No, it's only Wednesday. It's only Wednesday. But we'll talk again tomorrow, and I look forward to that. See you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. And tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.